angry with everyone. But on the line, there's a man who's never angry at all. It's David Moore from Astronomy Ireland. Hello, David. How are you?
I'm fantastic.
Okay. We're going to talk about the James Webb Space Telescope. How much of an asset is this now? I mean, keep improving all the time in exploration of space.
Well, this is simply the biggest story, possibly in the history of mankind, certainly in astronomy, a $10 billion telescope. Hubble only cost $2 billion, and look at the way it's revolutionized our understanding of the universe. We now know its expansion is not slowing up, it's actually increasing, something nobody ever guessed. We've tied down the age of the universe, it used to be 30 years ago before Hubble, between 10 and 20 billion years old. Now we know it's 13.7, maybe 13.8. We're arguing over that third decimal place.
It's that precise, David, is it?
It's that precise, yes.
Wow.
And we just don't know what James Webb is going to do. It was designed primarily to answer the big question of what were the first stars to shine in the universe like? And why is that important? Well, they were monster stars, maybe a million times brighter than the sun. If we put one where the sun is now, it would vaporize the Earth.
Wow.
And those stars are very important, because the bigger a star is, the shorter its life, and it blows itself to smithereens, and the Big Bang didn't create the building blocks for life. It's no good to us. It mostly made the two simplest atoms, hydrogen and helium, and we're not based on those. So the giant atoms like carbon, nitrogen, oxygen, that organic life is based on, they were made in these giant stars that crushed the atoms together, especially when they exploded and peppered the rest of the universe with the building blocks of life. At least, that's what we think. And Hubble can't see them. It can't see back that far. James Webb can, using a special trick and the fact that it's much bigger.
Okay, and is that because it can see distance or whatever? How can it sort of delve into the past to an extent, if you know what I mean? How can it do that?
Well, this is all what our New Year lecture was last Monday. But don't worry, you can still get it online, and you can also get it on DVD. And it was by an Irish astronomer from the Dublin Institute for Advanced Studies, Dr. Patrick Kavanagh, who has worked on James Webb. In fact, there's an Irish team that are contributing to the James Webb Space Telescope. So Ireland's at the cutting edge of the exploration of the universe. And what he explained is that when you look further out into space, really deep space, beyond our galaxy, you find the universe is expanding. And the further away you go, the faster it's expanding. So a galaxy like the Andromeda Galaxy, 2.5 million light years away, it's not moving much at all. But 25 million light years away, that's 10 times further, is moving 10 times faster. And when you look as far as Hubble can, so you're seeing galaxies that are about 13 billion years old. That's right to the Big Bang. One, they're very faint because they're so far away. But they're rushing away at extreme speeds, and that stretches their light from the white light that we see out into the infrared that we can't see. And Hubble wasn't designed to do that.
Okay.
It wasn't big enough either. So James Webb is designed to do that. The Irish worked on the instrument that's going to do that. And so it will be able to see, if we're right about how the early universe worked, the first stars ever to shine in the universe. We just don't know what they're going to be like. Going to be lots of them, few of them. Maybe they're not there at all. We've got it all wrong.
And David, it's strange, isn't it, as well? I mean, with all the wonderful work that the Irish have been involved in with astronomy and space exploration over the past, God knows, so many years, not sort of mentioned too often, so it's great when I get you on and you let people know. Can I ask you about, when we talk about space, we can always agree on the, I suppose, that it's infinite. That's it. I mean, that's the one word you can use about space.
Yeah, that's actually a tricky question, because the universe is a very weird thing. It's not three-dimensional on the it's kind of scales where you want to know about its origin. There's a fourth dimension called space-time. And it turns out that whenever the universe expanding into anything special, like if you set off a firecracker in the middle of a field, it would blow up into the field.
Mm-hmm.
But space itself is stretching. It's more like somebody's got a rubber sheet, like a trampoline, in the middle of the field. But everyone at the corners is pulling on it and stretching the space. And if the galaxies are stuck onto this rubber sheet, they're moving apart, not because anyone pushed them, but because somebody's stretching the underlying fabric of space-time. So we don't know if the most distant objects we can see, if there's objects beyond those, because their light hasn't got to us yet. So it becomes all very complicated. It sometimes makes your brain melt trying to think about it. But the scientists are experts in this, are trying to figure it out.
And does it play with time as well as regards time travel? Does it play with the idea of that to an extent?
It does in a huge amount. So, for instance, the James Webb Space Telescope is really a time machine. It's looking back. We can actually see, if you like, the aftermath of the Big Bang with a telescope that big. And so we're looking back at things where probably 13.5 billion years, between 13 and 13.5, the computer simulations, and that's all we've got at the moment, show that after the Big Bang, for about 400,000 years, it's too hot. You can't have any atoms. Everything's vaporized. But after 400,000 years, it cools down a bit, and you can start to form the first atoms. So they make the first clouds, mostly hydrogen and helium, and they form into, under gravity, form into these giant stars. But there's a lot of dark matter around at the moment. We don't even know what the dark matter is. Some theory that might be some kind of weird subatomic particle, but the jury's out on that one at the moment. That's waiting a Nobel Prize in the future.
Mm-hmm.
But it certainly had a big influence on how the galaxies formed, how these first star clouds and giant monster stars were all interacting. But it looks like they all fell together under gravity, formed galaxies. And this is what we're going to see. So although we're looking at something, we're really looking back in time with the James Webb Space Telescope. And that's not an anathema to astronomers, because when we look up at the night sky, do it yourself tonight, go outside, look at the stars, and the stars are typically tens to hundreds, some a few thousand light years away. So you're actually looking back in time, at least a few hundred years, at the average star in the sky. Now, factor in the James Webb Space Telescope with its huge mirror, powerful cameras, and you can do that. You can look back billions of years.
Mm. Two questions about it. Does it tell us anything about, or will it tell us anything about maybe life elsewhere rather apart from us?
And Lilo,
go on, David.
It tells us about us a lot, because all these large atoms, carbon, nitrogen, oxygen, helium, all those kind of things, they were made in the stars, and they're in our body now. So bits of us were inside ridiculously hot, million times brighter than the sun, stars at one stage, 13 billion years ago approximately, and things have cooled down since then. And the telescope will explain to us, you know, where we came from ultimately. I mean, we're pretty sure we understand the Big Bang mathematically, but then the sort of jumble craziness that goes on after that is very higgledy-piggledy. And really, computer simulations are all we've got, and you can tweak them to make things look one way or another. And so James Webb will actually tie that down. So we then should have a consistent path between the Big Bang, the tiny point, smaller than an individual atom, that expanded extremely rapidly for less than a trillionth of a second. And then for some reason, it's been coasting. It would have fit, by the way, in the palm of your hand after that trillionth of a second. And now it's been coasting and getting bigger and cooler for the last 13 billion years. I mean, it's a crazy story. I'd love people to hear the lecture that Dr. Patrick Kavanagh gave on Monday, because we briefed him. You're a scientist, yeah, but we want you to talk to the general public who haven't even done science for their leaving, sir.
And it's quite understood. People can get it, on your website and into the shop and get it and all that, because you record all these. And it's in layman's terms as well, David, like as you always explain.
Everything astronomy on is aimed at the general public. We're not for scientists. We're reporting what the scientists do.
Mm.
And especially the Irish ones. And there's a huge amount going on in Ireland. I mean, we invented space exploration. Look at New Range 5,000 years ago. We had the world's most powerful telescope in the 1800s. People came from all over the world to look through the James Webb Space Telescope of its day, beautifully restored down in Burr County, Offaly. And today, our researchers are working on the biggest telescope mankind has ever done. Astronomy on is the world's most popular astronomy club. There is definitely something in our genes. Space is the future of mankind. Join Astronomy Ireland.
Okay, maybe this is where they came first then, where all this talk about aliens coming here and going to Egypt and building the pyramids. Maybe they came here first. That's a good...
good. If we get some evidence of that, we'll publish it.
Yeah.
Frankly, I'm a bit sceptical on that story.
Okay. Well, listen, can I ask you then about how this aligns itself with the space travel? Does it diminish in any way? Does it shorten, you know, because they've advanced so much now, like with our little holiday trips up into space, will they sort of say, well, look, we've got this telescope now, the James Webb Space Telescope. We don't need to go anymore. We can see it from where we are. Or do we still need to do some space travel just to explore the planets near us?
I can't see us ever getting to the edge of space or going back to the Big Bang and actually physically being there. But there's a lot that we can do with a telescope like that. But there's also some great things you can do in situ. And at the moment, our technology really only allows us to physically visit the planets in our own solar system. So as we speak, there are rovers on Mars, and not just the Americans. In fact, Europe's going to launch one this year. The Chinese have one. The Russians have tried a few times. There's a craft orbiting Mars. We have another one that's going around Jupiter, and there are plans for this to the outer planets as well, Venus and Mercury, the inner planets also, and even one going to the Sun. So there are all these spacecraft sending back information all the time. The ultimate thing is to get people out there, because they say, you know, if you could land a geologist on Mars, he would do so much in a few years that might take centuries with robot craft. Of course, it's very expensive to get people there, because you have to be so much more careful. If a robot craft blows up, it's only a question of money and a lot of time by the scientists. If people are involved, it's a huge tragedy. And so human exploration is 10 to 100 times more expensive. But the world's two richest men, Jeff Bezos, Elon Musk, both own space companies, and they've both said they're going to put 1 million people on Mars by the end of this century. If I said that, lock me up, I'd be crazy. But when people with the money and the space companies say it, you have to say, what do they know that we don't know? And if you watch these people carefully and see the craft they're building and test launching at the moment, they're on their way.
Mm-hmm. And they've got the best people in the technology to do it for them, haven't they? So therefore, it's all possible.
And the great thing I love, bringing it back to Ireland, is that Musk and Bezos, they were kids without any significant money who were interested in space. And that interest in technology got them into the businesses they're in. And both of them have practically given it up. They're still trying to run them in the background. And they've gone back to their hobby, space. And they want to see colonies on other planets. Now, I know that some people give them a bit of a bad press, but, you know, because billionaires are spending their money on space. Somebody has to. There has to be a future home for the human race. Mm-hmm. An asteroid could hit this planet at any time. It's very, very unlikely. But it'd be nice to have a backup civilization out there. That's Elon Musk's mantra anyway. We don't have to agree with everything he does, but certainly we can agree with some things. And as a space fan, as a kid, I'm sort of probably more on his side than on any other side. So I don't see him doing anything really bad.
I'd say if he made it financially possible, David, you would be one of the first people up there, wouldn't you?
I've already applied. The Delta astronauts, the SpaceX, SpaceX company, the European Space Agency. I'm not sure I'm eligible for NASA. There was too many other jobs to apply for anyway. I've even had some of the interviews, and I'm still on the interview track for the current round. They haven't rejected me yet.
Okay.
I think 25,000 people applied this year, last year now.
Okay.
People may have been reading about this in Astronomy Island magazine. We were telling everybody with a science degree, get your application in.
Okay, it's wonderful. I love talking to you. Your enthusiasm never fades or even diminishes in the slightest, and that's why you have so many people applying to join Astronomy Ireland all the time. And people can join, can't they, David, and they get the magazine and all the... Give us an idea of what people can do and also about any more lectures coming up, and people can get a recent lecture on the telescope as well.
The one-stop shop is astronomy.ie. So if you go to that website, you can see our social media free of charge. Follow up there. Any events coming up, like these lectures, we'll tell you all about them. Then join Astronomy Island if you can afford €1 a week. Most of it's done by volunteers. And you'll get the magazine in the post every month. And that's packed full of all the stories, what to see in the sky, especially the Irish angle to them. That's unique. And also, there's a weekly email that goes out just to the members, telling them all the very latest as well. And we've lots more plans apart from that. And if you want, you can do our evening classes that cover all this over 8 weeks, Wednesday night, 2 hours every Wednesday night for 8 weeks. And that's all on astronomy.ie. They start next month, but you should enroll now or give them as gifts to young kids who may one day become Elon Musk, Stephen Hawking, or Jeff Bezos. And we've had members of our club, we're 30 years old, over 30 years old now, have gone on to work with Stephen Hawking. And I know there's people working in NASA and universities around the country. It's a great hobby to get kids involved in, especially. So astronomy.ie, or just search for Astronomy Ireland and join the world's most popular astronomy
club. Okay. Thanks very much, David. Always a great pleasure to. So I'll spend some time in the afternoon absorbing and thinking about all the information you've given me today, and I'll enjoy it. Thank you very much, David. Have a good weekend and Happy New Year again.
My pleasure. Happy New Year to you and all the listeners.
Thank you. And that's David Moore, Astronomy Ireland, astronomy.ie for all the information, and also all the programs that you can get your hands on there as well. Okay, we have a little bit of this for you. Jackie Wilson.